Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise. I'm your host, David Price. Thank you for joining me today. You are going to hear another Fantastic Four Sites installment, one that I will be looking forward to, one that I'm looking forward to listening to because the guys are going to be talking about, among other things, Fractions, Fantastic Four, and FF, the first issues of those two titles. And I read them, so I'm looking forward to see where we may see eye to eye, where we may differ on things. So they're going to play you out. I'm going to talk briefly about a couple things that I read, one of which, Amazing Spider-Man 699, of course written by Dan Slott, penciled by Humberto Ramos, and inks by Victor Olazaba. And it, Dan Slott is a very clever man, and I am glad to see that one thing I guessed makes sense and plays into 698's big reveal. I did miss one or two things from previous events that also played a part in that big reveal. And the art by Ramos and Olazaba, it kind of makes you feel a little for Otto. I can't really think of too many other teams, so especially, you know, Ramos bringing the way Otto looks to the page. It is not a pretty picture. It's definitely not attractive, but it was great seeing a lot of, well, not a lot, I'll say it was great seeing one particular character who kind of was introduced, when I first started getting Amazing Spider-Man in the mail through the subscription when I lived out west in the early 80s. And it was neat seeing this character again. He's not somebody I tend to think about often, but it's one of those things where it's neat to see him reappear. But I thought the way everything was explained worked very well. Art and writing both meshed up greatly, and it's seriously, the way everything was explained was just it worked. It worked for me. I have no problems, no complaints. I'm looking forward to 700. They use 700 minutes in the title of the next issue. Of course, Amazing Spider-Man 700. Of course, the last for now issue of Amazing Spider-Man, with Superior Spider-Man kicking off early next year. There were some really interesting moments in 699, a confession or two. It really didn't slow anything down from the last issue, except that things were just looked at from a different point of view, we'll say. But it was still it didn't lose anything. Still moving things along, and I have no problem with where they're going. I'm interested to see where things are going. I also read Avengers number 1, of course written by Jonathan Hickman, and penciled by or drawn by Jerome Pena, colors by Dean White. Not sure where Pena may end and White begins when it comes to the finished product, but that's the way things were credited. This was a very interesting setup. It very much different than Uncanny Avengers. People seem to be caught up on I guess Captain America's new uniform, new outfit, and how this issue explained why. I don't know, something like that really needed to be explained. It's not Iron Man's armor or the Scarlet Spider, or it's just one of those things where he depending on, I guess, the battle at hand. But okay, you know, so this showed Steve Rogers putting on a different outfit, and one that you saw in the first issue of Captain America, one that you saw in Uncanny Avengers, one that you've seen So I guess some want to say that, well, this should have been published first, and I think that is something a little odd to nitpick about when it comes to why things are done in comics. But in any case, it seems to serve a purpose. That last page kind of really hooked me a little bit. Some of it was just, I don't know. It's hard for me to. It was well written. I have absolutely no problem with that. Characters, for the most part, sounded like who they're supposed to sound like. Hickman seems to have a grasp on these characters who were in a summer movie this year. We'll see how the rest of this initial arc plays out, but I'm not sure if this was. All right, there were some characters that were introduced who I don't. Maybe I'm just numb. Maybe I had some preconceived notions going in. I don't know. There were just some things in this issue where I guess that these characters are a pretty big deal. If they were able to do what they did in this issue, I should like have my mouth agape and just in awe with the comic opened and at arm's length, because I can't believe what I just saw and that this just happened. And maybe in that case the issue was too short. There wasn't enough there for me to really feel like I was knocked for a loop. And I said, maybe that's on me. And it was still a very interesting issue. I'm looking forward to the next, because like I said, that last page really has me interested in seeing where we're going from here. And again, it's one of those images of Captain America putting out the call. The other issue I read was Daredevil End of Days number 3. More people from... Actually, I don't even know if I should call it Daredevil comic. It's basically a Ben Urich story, and it's basically Ben trying to find out about Matt's last year or two or three of his life before Bullseye killed him. Although, not sure if that's really true when you look at the last page. But it's still a story where I kind of want to see it through the end now, just to find out what other, who else can kind of just verbally abuse poor Ben. He's trying to just tell this story, and I don't know if he's trying to bring closure to his own life or this friend he had, and just trying to make sense of things. If it's his if it's that investigative journalist that bone in his body that I guess wants to feed. I don't know. It's just I'm kind of over that it's a Daredevil story, really. But the art by Jansen and Sienkiewicz is great. I'm not sure where the story is kind of dragging. I don't know if it's Bendis, if it's Mac. I'm not sure. I just, there are times where I'm reading it and things just feel like they drag out a little bit. There's a focus on one character, but not enough on another, I feel. It's maybe I'll revisit it once it's done, but as I'm reading it, as it's coming out, I still, it is a comic where if I didn't read it, I would feel like I missed something and I'd have to go back and look for it. So, kudos to this team for putting out something that I want to continue the story with. Whereas sometimes I feel like, oh, I have to read that. So it's and then I'll look up at my Daredevil hardcovers and I'll Daredevil is a character who I do like. He's a character that I've read off and on for most of my comic book reading life. And I don't, I guess, like seeing him mistreated. And when he is, I just, I move on. I walk away. I have no problem with saying I'll be back later. So this is because it's not a story set in continuity. It's not a canon. It's not one of those things where it's a good story is basically what I'm trying to tell you. So if you get a chance to check out Daredevil End of Days, please do so. It's 8 issues. I'm going to, as of right now with the 3rd issue, I'm going to see it through to the end. So I'm going to, leave it at that. 3 issues. I read 3 issues that I would recommend to other people, although maybe not all one, something that you could start from here and move forward. The other two are in the middle or almost in the middle of other things going on in their own title, so really not a good jumping on point. But in any case, I'm going to shut up now. The guys are going to take it away, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, true believers, it's time for some Fantastic Foresights with Mighty Muddled Merrymakers Chris Campbell, New Mutant Alan White, and Steve Raker here in the Comic Book Bunker. Season's greetings, gents.
Feliz Navidad.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
And we are taking 5 here in honor of pianist Dave Brubeck's passing this past week, and we're ready to talk Fantastic Four with regards to the Marvel Now relaunches and renumbering scheme. As well as we're going to try to go way back to the late 70s for an FF creator spotlight that covers some old books that have always been near and dear to my heart. So let's get right into it. We've got Fantastic Four number 1, a new number 1 from Matt Fraction and artists Mark Bagley and Mark Farmer.
So they intended to make sure that you're reading the FF, the Fantastic Four first, and then the FF Future Foundation.
Correct. Just which is just as the title ran, under Hickman's hand as well.
Yeah, it's legacy.
What'd you think of the cover of this Fantastic Four 1?
I don't like the logo.
It does remind me of that logo from the mid-70s when they kind of went away from the old classic one a little. Yeah. I don't know if I go for the orange, but I wonder if it'll stay that color.
It's okay. It's okay.
So, my two complaints about the cover, I think the Thing and Reed look pretty good, and the coloring is great, but Sue's got the beaver teeth going. That's a lot of white in that mouth. And the other is that
you have a bit of an overbite. It's okay.
And Johnny looks more like Toro. Like, he looks like a young, almost prepubescent proportions to him. But the Flame really comes off well. Mounts does a great job.
I think when we get into the story, you'll see that he looks like a young Toro because he's acting like a young Toro.
The hothead is back. The splash page on the first in the first page of this first issue here was surprising to me. I think it gives away the punchline a year early. To what's supposed to be a year-long saga. I mean, we get a scene of them all caught in a cosmic ray storm, so I guess they're going to recreate that initial instance of the cosmic ray mishap to cure them at the end of this?
You think? I think they call it a booster shot, right?
It's surprising that they would put all the cards on the table there, right on the first panel, though.
Maybe, and surprising that they would have Franklin in the middle of it, too.
Yeah, well, the kids, as we'll see, are connected to what this whole mission is going to be. We get some Franklin kind of having some bad dreams about things happening in the future, and that's never a good thing when Franklin starts, becoming cognizant of the future. Mm-hmm. But it never seems like he is cognizant of things that are, like, what he's going to get for his birthday, you know? It's always going to be something bad coming. And
remember when he was a member of the Power Pack?
Sure.
Sure.
Teams where his kind of like his God level power allowed him just to do that on a daily basis. He could have dreams and astral projection.
Yeah, he had that little astral dream form that he ran around in, which was weird. There's a team. The team is introduced here in the maws of some giant creature, and Reed gets his arm bit off. He is looking pretty haggard too, like he's fairly, you know, distressed here. Interesting though, I never liked Reed with like long hair in the front, where it's like his cowlicks come up to look almost like horns. Like he's got that little bit of that like Ra's al Ghul look going there. I don't like that look for Reed, but I like the clean cut scientist look.
I like it when it's a little bit curly on top.
You like the Molecule Man Reed Richards look.
Yeah, like
exactly that.
Yep. Exactly.
Except with the big cruncher mouth though. That's gross on the Molecule Man Reed Richards.
It's also good that they spend a little time, a few pages, showing that the Future Foundation cast, you know, is still around, and they get some depictions of some like home front interactions with the Fantastic Four themselves, sure. And that's all good stuff, I think, and very family oriented.
Yeah, I think that I think Fraction, it was a layup. I think, you know, that was part of the best. That was one of the coolest, funnest parts of Hickman's run. So it's like, I think it was a no doubt he was going to put in some of that into the first issue.
Something's bothering Reed though. He's trying to fix his arm, and he's seeing structures breaking down, and it's really, you know, consistent with what he's kind of terming like a cosmic ray cancer.
It's nasty, though. I mean, this is really disgusting looking.
The inside of Reed's arm?
Yeah. There you go. This kind of raggedy, stripped, looking like the bark got torn off of it, and it's got liquid and fluid leaking from it and everything. It's
it
nasty.
It looks thick and hard and leathery rather than, you know, rubbery, you know? It doesn't look... It doesn't look wet and pliable, that's for sure. It reminds me of my cadaver back in grad school.
Oh, my gosh.
Wet and pliable is always better than tough and leathery. but science is gross.
Thank you, Chris. I thank you very
science
much.
Science is gross. And we also get Johnny on a date. He's like on a date in the negative zone with some girl with pink hair.
A girl named Darla.
Darla.
And if you look at, I guess she's reading for her own press, and she's on the front page of, she's on the cover of Pizzazz magazine. Anybody remember Pizzazz?
I certainly do. It was Marvel's version of Dynamite magazine, right?
Right. And she's called Miss Thing in the press.
She is.
So I think this is going to be the same girl who goes over to FF
in
the Thing suit.
Maybe she. It's interesting in the Creator Spotlight issues. I saw ads for Pizzazz in those issues.
I had a subscription to Pizzazz when I was a kid in the
70s. There you go.
I did too. There you go. I did too.
Excellent. Old the little people. Doctor Strange crossword puzzles and things. But we also get, I thought was cool, we get the panel of little Anilius, or Annihilus, you know, converting the heathens on some planet surface in the negative zone. So I like these little calls back to some of the stuff that Hickman set up. Like, don't worry, we haven't forgotten about this stuff.
But I got to tell you, this Johnny Storm, man, he must be taking the same juice that Franklin is taking. Stupid pills, man.
Yep.
What happened to I died in the negative zone. I've survived. I fought my way through countless battles. I'm older than I was before. What happened to that Johnny?
I have no answer for you.
While he doesn't seem to grow up, the Yancey Street gang certainly does. They've hit the digital age with their pranks and pull a social media stunt on Ben that leaves him trying to figure out how to delete something from the internet.
That's kind of funny, actually.
Well, Reed decides they've got to go on a trip in a space-time machine for a field trip, a vacation. But it's really to search unknown universes for a cure to this cosmic ray radiation cancer that is inflicting all of them, including the kids.
That's why they have to go.
Yeah. And there's our, you know, that sets up for this next year storyline here. But Reed, being prudent as he is, figures, you know, he can't leave, you know, the Future Foundation with no one at the helm. And because they're flying in a space-time machine, the way things are supposed to work out, they're only going to be gone 4 minutes of our time, even though they're going on a year-long voyage.
Relativistic travel or what? I guess not really, though, right? Because that would actually do the opposite, right? It would make more time go by. So it must be dimensional travel, and that's why the 4 minute difference, right? They're going to other universes. They're not. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting thing. It's a very much a setup, strange 4 minutes, not explained why, probably not even important why. But it sets up the pretense for the and I want to talk about that when we talk about FF.
A three-hour tour.
I have, not to tip my hand, but I have serious issues with something that happens in FF. But let's finish this episode. Issue.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to find some replacements just in case something goes wrong while they're on this four-minute voyage. And that's where we continue over to the first issue of FF number one. And overall, I thought this was an okay setup issue. I didn't like the fact that they gave away, I think, the punchline on that first page. But maybe we'll see how it ends up. Maybe it'll be different. But what really struck me the most was Mount's colors, for one, as it always does. And that inker Mark Farmer, I think, did wonders over Bagley's faces.
I was gonna ask you about it if you didn't say it yourself.
He really did. There's a couple that I think you know, or the Bagley comes through a little bit, and we get a little bit of ugliness. That third to last panel on the last page, that profile of Sue is like Nurse Ratchet as Sue.
Unbelievable.
I figure with it being on the last page, that was probably deadline looming, and he didn't erase it and redraw the face, you know. But overall, I think it was serviceable, and I think even the tech stuff was okay. The space-time machine, it didn't look like the same tech that we've seen before. It's definitely Bagley tech, and I don't know if I've ever coined that phrase before. I'm not used him drawing machinery, so it's interesting to see him flex those muscles.
Well, it's supposed to be the same ship that Johnny rode out of the negative zone with, so maybe he had some models or something to draw from.
Hmm.
I have a feeling that Alan may be able to jump and piggyback off what I'm about to say, but I had tremendous issues with this issue. I thought it was actually very bad. I thought it was very bad, and I'll explain why. I don't like to be negative for negative sake. I don't like to judge a comic for what I think it should have done. I'll try to judge it for what it did do. The problem I had was I can see no reason why, after the last couple of years of stories, why Reed would lie to Sue about this. Completely absurd. I don't buy it for a second. It throws out everything of the last few years of why he would basically be lying to her. Now, if it turns out that he's not and she's in on it, then I'll take some of this back. But there was nothing that led me to believe that he was doing anything other than once again hiding stuff from her after what's happened. And I think that's just crap. Crap writing.
The last panel in the last caption is him saying, "Trust me," to her.
No, see, that's BS. I have huge problems with that.
I thought the beginning
was weak sauce. You don't lead off. You don't lead off the issue with 1 year from now, and then you go to a dream, or is it the future, or is it Franklin, and then you have mommy bots come in. No, Sue does not leave mommy bots with Franklin. Not now. No, that's nonsense.
Yeah.
So I'm calling Mr. Fraction down to the carpet. I mean, if you say that, hey, trust me, no. Like, you need to lead off with a stronger issue. And if you I'm not down with the not telling his wife, because it's just such a break from the character, and you're throwing away years of development on that critical point. And I hope something quickly changes, because that ticks me off. And if it's resolved next issue by him saying, okay, hey, like, after they're on the ship, saying, hey, we're really doing it for this reason, and I didn't want to tell you before, and Sue just goes, oh, it's okay, you do what you have to do. No, that's nonsense.
She should backhand him. Say, after all we've been through, you're going to pull this crap on me again?
Especially because it's not just his problem. It's all of their problem, you know?
All of their problems. And it's the same type of mistake he's made at least once or twice in the last couple of years. And they've been handled. And so it was just frustrating. Yeah. And I don't want to be overly negative, but it hurt my heart. I did not like it. It just seemed doom and gloom in my eyes for how Fraction's going to handle those relationships. I don't like what I'm seeing. And that's all I'm going to say. I think the art is good. I think Farmer's great. I think Mounts is great. I mean, it's just it hurts my heart. So that's all I'm going to say.
So I will piggyback a little bit there. When he got announced that he was going to do this, and then Matt Fraction opened up that Matt-tastic site for him going back through the old archives of the Fantastic Four. I think this is the thing that kept me from going ballistic on Johnny's personality and Franklin's regression back to just being a big baby needing a big old hug from mommy. I think he is taking his cues from old FF and trying to get another classic feel. And we know in the classic issues that Reed always took the high seat and decided never to tell the rest of his family what was going on. But what you're saying is exactly true, Chris. There's been a lot of development, and we've gotten past those days. So I'm just thinking maybe Matt Fraction is doing a conscious decision to write stories as though the last 20 years hasn't happened.
I hear that. But then I think it's a marketing. I think it's a message issue then. I think then, you know, they want it both ways. They want people who've been following it to feel like what's happened in the past matters. But yet they don't. They just pay lip service to it, and that's not actually the case. So that's disappointing. It's like, is this DC 52 relaunch of the series, or is this not? Does what happened over the last few years matter? Because that was real character growth, real development, and I don't see it being continued. Restarting it maybe, but I can't tell.
What I don't like about that aspect is that it's as if Fraction sees that as a character trait of Reed's rather than as character growth.
I agree. Yes.
Yep. All right. And before we get into FF1, quick little detour to the Marvel Now 0.1 issue. I know Alan read this as well. There's a little 8-page story in here about Ant-Man by Fraction and Mike Allred. And it has that kind of kooky, pop arty, hey kids, it's Ant-Man kind of intro to it that, I think really sets the tone for what FF is going to be like. And it opens with Scott giving Scott Lang, the second Ant-Man, who died in that Avengers disassembled stuff, but he came back in that Chaos War, right? Was that when some characters like Alpha Flight came back? I think that's when.
I'll have to defer.
No. He came back in the Young Avengers.
He came back in that too. Okay.
Maxi series. Yeah. All right. It was Iron Lad was Kang of the future.
Yeah.
In a teenage form, and so he was a time traveler. So Cassie Lang, Scott's daughter, co-opted Iron Lad's ability to go back and forth in time and snatched her father out before he got killed.
Gotcha.
In dissembled. So he was with her at the Avengers Mansion, not knowing why he was alive or not knowing that he had died.
Yes.
But he didn't understand why he was displaced in time all the way up to the point where his daughter was a superhero.
Okay.
Okay.
And we get him a moment with him and young Cassie before her heroics, and he's giving her and us readers a lesson, and it's a good little lesson, and I think sets up, again, what the tone of FF is going to be, that art shouldn't take itself seriously all the time, and that sometimes silly is okay, too.
Yes, and, it is.
And that that message attached to Mike Allred art, and I'm plunking down my dineros. unfortunately, we go from that right to a big reminder that Doom killed Cassie in the Children's Crusade. And
Did he?
Yes, he did.
Yes,
spoilers.
Really?
Read this Children's Crusade. It was extremely well written, extremely well drawn, and it's nicely presented in an oversized hardcover.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. Is that Jimmy Chung?
Yes, it is.
Oh, well, I think,
And Alan Heinberg, and it's really good.
All right, I'll check that out.
It's harsh. Mike, it's so sad.
It's Doom trying to, like, marry the Scarlet Witch and all this other... there's so many kooky things in it. It's a good one.
Okay.
Now we get this revamped Ant-Man that Scott Lang is, and he's got these weird hovering, like, tendrils that help him, like, float around and seem like they're, like, waving around him like spaghetti, and he's back in action, and we see him fighting microscopic eyelash mites and mini nanobots because he's infiltrating Latveria and doing a deed before making his escape. And it's 8 pages, so it's a quick little story. But basically what he is doing is making Doom look silly, literally.
Okay.
And note whose eyelashes he came off of, whose eyelash mites he was fighting.
I didn't notice that. Who is it?
It's the pink-haired Darla.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. So oh. So Mike Allred brought her from the Fantastic Four, number one. And at first, because this guy that she's dating is a blonde-haired guy, but it doesn't say who he is. Now I'm going to have to assume that it's Johnny.
Huh.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Yeah.
There for the Doom portrait unveiling, huh?
I guess. I don't know why he would be there. But that's Darla. That's the same Darla with her pink hair.
Who is this Darla?
We'll find out, won't we?
FF number one is written by Fraction with art by Mike Allred and Laura Allred, who really is like a color inker.
Beautiful.
And does some really nice tonal stuff over her hubby's art. It's really evolved their relationship artistically over the last few years in really nice ways, I think.
I will buy almost anything from them. Almost anything. And the art in this book was staggeringly beautiful. And
it really was.
All of the women were beautiful and gorgeous. And Sue, and even She-Hulk was hot.
And the kids looked like kids, didn't they?
And goofy the kids looked
kids.
Like kids. It was all good. Reed looked like a mad scientist. It was all good. All of it.
It
loves
is...
me that now.
Oh yes.
I was gonna say weird. We can go into it, but like you already hinted at, I just want to say one thing. The 4 minutes, right? That's the purpose of this issue. Before we get into the details, I just want to say that what do you think? Do you think that he goes to recruit and kind of get a replacement team? Do you think it's because he doesn't think they're going to make it back, or he legitimately believes that, yeah, we really need Fantastic Four for those 4 minutes, and he knows they'll be back? You know, it makes a big difference. If you think that he wants a replacement team, then I call shenanigans on duping people in to taking over when you know you're going on a suicide mission or a mission with very low chance of probability, and then shame on Reed for doing what he's doing. It's completely absurd, and you would go to different people altogether if that was the case.
Take the science out of it, and you're left with somebody like Ben, right? And the way that Ben talks about it with She-Hulk is, you know, we've got this thing planned, but you know what? When we do things, not everything always comes out as planned. And they've got responsibilities, and they want to make sure the responsibilities are covered.
Zero problem. Zero problem with how Ben handled it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm talking about the way the quote-unquote leaders handled it, because Reed is the leader. And he presumes that Scott will be the leader. And correct me if I'm wrong, but when he talks to him, he makes it seem like it's really just these 4 minutes. I mean, it's really just like, oh, hey, you'll be – this will help you too, you know, by getting to know these kids and being the leader for 4 minutes. And it just seems like he's lying to someone else now, you know. And, like, does he think they'll be back? Because if he – It just bothered me. If he thinks there's a real chance that they won't come back, that's kind of cruel what he's doing, and I think irresponsible. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's he wants to tell this story, the writer Fraction does, and he needs to get the pieces into place, be damned with characterization.
Absolutely, absolutely true, but it smacked me in my face.
Yeah, I hear you.
I feel it. I want to kind of connect the dots, and I'm saying, because we've seen replacement FF teams before. We've seen replacement members, and most of the it just never seems to be straight up lying or misleading to get people, you know, unless maybe I'm misremembering some of the people they've recruited. But that struck me as odd when he went. I think he just wants to use this character and tell stories with this character.
Yeah.
But it's a shame that he did exactly what you said. He said, characterization be damned. Let's just get these chess pieces into place. And forget what that makes Reed look like, or, you know, I just don't think he's too scientific to just, because, like, if he doesn't come back, do you really want Scott Lang in charge of the Future Foundation and the FF?
It's a big burden to put on a guy who's already dealing with a big burden.
You know, it's clear who you go and talk to, you know, you go talk to Henry or, you know, somebody. I mean, not this poor guy.
Well, let me bring up the fact that towards the end of FF1, Scott figures it out anyway.
Right.
Scott realizes, because Reed brings him into his study where his little holographic floaties are, and Scott looked at them and he said, don't think that I can't tell a carcinogenic growth on a pico scale when I see it. So then Reed confesses to Scott. So I think that's what made Scott say, okay, fine, I'll do it. But the thing, and so the deception is over before the end of the book is, for Scott anyway, though.
He says that, you know, we can, you know, be of use to each other in my absence. And then he says, regardless of how long that lasts. So you can look at it both ways. He's saying it could be long, but he could be saying it's only going to be 4 minutes. You know, you can play it both ways.
But that's the thing now that I stumble at. What can anyone do in 4 minutes? It doesn't. That part really just doesn't make sense to me. I can see how cute it is, the idea of it, to throw it out there in a press conference at Comic Con or something.
Fantastic Four, 4 minutes.
Very cute, very funny. But if I'm a superhero and you're telling me to come into the building and to teach some kids and to take this responsibility on for 4 minutes, really? Why don't you just turn the lights off and have Willie Lumpkin turn them on in the, as soon as you come back?
Yeah. Why don't you go at night when everyone's sleeping?
Yeah. No, do it during daylight. Do it during daylight savings hour.
There you go. Boink.
Yeah, there you go.
Then they'll owe you 56 minutes.
And if he would have come at it like a, hey, look, we're gonna leave. We're gonna disappear from this space to your eyes and reappear 4 minutes later. So can you stand in my office next to the most important stuff I own, literally to make sure some crazy time traveling doom or some crazy nonsense doesn't literally find out about this and pop in for 4 minutes and wreak all sorts of havoc? Fine, but he did not sell it that way. Right. It was more of a, can you be in the headmaster's office of the FF and just kind of hang out and wait for pizza? So, yeah, I thought the art was glorious and beautiful. It would take longer than that for the pizza, but
yeah.
The art was beautiful, and I'm fine. I want him to tell an interesting story, but yeah, it was really crammed in there sideways for me. And like Steve's put it best, you know, characterization, whatever, let's get the chess pieces in place. And I'm excited to see these stories because I love the art, and I think Fraction – mark my words, in a year, I think people will look back and see this is a fun book that was just kind of silly and fun, and you get the FF kids, and I think it'll be fun. I think the Fantastic Four book will not be looked at as the better of the two a year from now. Just my thoughts.
Unless maybe in Fantastic Four, Matt Fraction becomes the writer to finally put in words that Franklin has been retarding his growth all along with his cosmic ray spawn powers. No. Because Franklin just seems to refuse to get anywhere above the age of 5. And it's really, every single time I see it, gets up each nostril and does a little dance. What is he doing on page 2? What is the problem here? He's making faces and stuff. Come on. I mean, they're beautiful faces. I love the art. It's very expressive and cute. But good God, is he 12? Is he 8? Is he 5? Is he what?
Even Pebbles and Bam Bam grew up, didn't they? Well, for those who don't know who the cast of this replacement FF is going to be, this is really the getting the band together issue. You've got, like we said, Reed is recruiting Scott Lang, the second Ant-Man. And Sue visits the Inhumans to recruit Medusa. And what's interesting here, I think, is this Scott Lang Ant-Man has been associated with the FF before. During the Tom DeFalco, Paul Ryan run, when Reed was missing, presumed dead, Scott Lang was one of the team. He was the scientific connection for them. Living there with Cassie, and Cassie had the whole relationship with Kristoff and all that stuff. Fun stuff. And then, of course, Medusa's been part of the FF on maybe 2 occasions.
Naturally.
Yeah. So she's a good person to go to, but she's a mother now, and she's married to Black Bolt, and there's all that kooky Black Bolt stuff going on. So in that way, I thought she was a little bit of a weird choice. And Medusa also tips her hand to Sue that her child it seems, and maybe it's just me being a therapist who works with kids with special needs, but it seems like she was kind of saying her kiddo has special needs. I guess we'll see where that goes.
In fact, I missed this. When did she have a kid?
She's had
a kid
ago.
For a while.
Yeah.
Oh, he was featured in Annihilation storylines, right? His son?
I don't know if he was featured, but I'm sure he was mentioned.
He was kidnapped, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right?
I think you're right.
His son was kidnapped in the Annihilation storylines. They've got a young son. Yeah,
I think his birth was back in like maybe one of the Marvel graphic novels that Brett Blevins drew, wasn't that? Or was that the marriage of Black Bolt? I don't remember. But anyway.
But they definitely have a son, and he's been in some great storylines, but that's who they're talking about.
What I thought was weird about Sue, there's a great panel, and boy, does Allred draw Lockjaw good.
Yep.
With drooling. The spittle. Yeah, it's great.
Let's see. What does he not draw well in this issue?
Well, here's one that can. Sue walks up this path of floating invisible force field platforms, makes a great aerial view looking down over Manhattan and everything. But can she do that? Can she put weight on a force field that isn't supported on a column?
I believe so.
Because, like,
I've seen her use flying saucer technique before.
Yeah, okay.
She always
had to have columns. I thought it had to have a base, but she can float it and bear weight, huh?
I think that needs to stay out there because.
Well, I guess she uses her them as projectiles, right? So, I mean,
that doesn't bear weight though. That's
it doesn't bear weight, but it doesn't. It's free forming and doesn't. Okay, that's fair enough. But I've seen her use a circle to hold people up over ground that has disappeared.
I had to think about it because I've definitely seen her make really tall columns that she stood on too. You know, why would you need to do that? But
well, she could have just made a square and just made it go up, increase in size, right? Could have made like kind of an elevator, right? Like stand on it and then just increase the size of the field until like an elevator, like
right,
a
yeah,
big
yeah.
palm.
Until it's 8 miles in the sky.
Until it's 8 miles in the sky. That'd been kind of cool.
They're about 8 miles. They're above planes.
It makes for a great visual, though. Let me tell
it
you.
It does.
We also get Ben gathering up the She-Hulk. Now, she's been part of the FF, too. We know when Ben himself was off-world as Rocky Grimm, Space Ranger. what do you guys think of Allred's She-Hulk?
I think her arms are just a little too meaty.
Me, too. Nice, pretty face, but I don't particularly like the way he shows her, like, sinew. I think it's a little... It looks a little weird, a little scratchy, a little polished. I don't know, but something doesn't strike me right when I'm looking at her physique.
She looks hot. She looks great. She looks wonderful.
Face looks great.
As a 6'4" man, she looks good.
Oh, you work it. Go,
there's some
big
real
boy.
Classic thing faces, though, where Allred obviously was going back to some classic Kirby goofy-looking thing face poses.
Mm-hmm. Especially that first one where he's holding the bag for her.
And the weird one that we all thought was a weird one going into this, and it's still not clear how it's going to fall into place, is that the fourth member is going to be this Darla Deering, this pink-haired girl who Johnny's dating.
Dating is nice. Thank you, Steve. That was very nice for you to say dating.
And Johnny's, like, totally off task. He's supposed to find somebody to replace the thing or whatever, and he is just, like, you know, rolling around in the hay with Darla Deering here. And we know that she's going to be on the team, but she isn't yet here. So it's very strange. He hasn't come to that conclusion that it's going to have to be her. She doesn't know what the heck's going on yet. That door is still wide open.
Yeah, because Johnny has no recent experience in gathering together competent people to achieve an objective.
Right? Surely not. No.
Yeah, not at all.
He must have suffered some brain trauma between the last and the first of this issue, because he is an absolute idiot in this thing. He can't even remember what he was supposed to do. He can't even interpret his own notes on this little gadget he's looking at. What is wrong with him?
Disappointing. Yeah. Overall, I'm excited for the art, and I will – let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Johnny's going to be dumb, he's just going to be dumb. I'll have to learn how to accept it. That's how Matt Fraction wants to write him. What can I tell you?
Oh, well.
All right, so that's your new FF and Fantastic Four books, folks. And let's take a look way back. Let's get on the old space-time machine ourselves and head back to, originally kind of the end of 74. And we're looking at writer Len Wein. And he was involved in some of the crazy post-Stan Lee time where the book was really trying to find a consistent writer. You had Conway mm-hmm. for a little bit. You had Roy Thomas for a little couple of issues there. Tony Isabella wrote an issue in there somewhere. You got
Archie.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Archie Goodwin. You get Len for a few issues. You got Roy again for a long run. And then Len came back on. So there were a couple of scattered issues, issue 154, 155, and 156, that are sort of part of the other storylines, and it's really a group effort, obviously, at that time. And it's funny because after Len Wein did a Meteor run here, then he hands off to Marv Wolfman, who had a little, you know, meaty run, and they both left the book when they left the company, which was in the late 70s. So that's what it takes to get you off the FF at that time. 154 uses a weird framing sequence around an old issue of Strange Tales. So it's like partially a reprint. And then 155 and 156 begin this three-part Silver Surfer story that then ends up being handed off to Roy Thomas. And it's a really kooky storyline where the Silver Surfer comes back and really just tries to mop the floor with the FF. And the reason is because Dr. Doom has somehow gotten his hands on Shalabal, and she doesn't recognize Silver Surfer anymore. And nope. Dr. Doom is going to marry her.
That's right.
And isn't that just exactly like the Children's Crusade, where Dr. Doom got a hold of Scarlet Witch, who she was, and he was going to marry her.
Yep. And isn't this around the same time in Marvel when, like, over in Spider-Man, Doc Ock was trying to marry Aunt May?
I mean, it's just all nuptials weekend, I guess.
And, like, Tiny Tim was trying to marry somebody on Ed Sullivan, and crazy dogs and cats living together in harmony.
Now, Miss Vicky! Miss Vicky!
Oh, God.
I get the star.
Oh my.
I am the star today.
But anyway, but then we get Len Wein's more substantial run of consecutive issues, and that goes from issue 184 to 94. Yeah, and there's a couple of issues in there, 189 and 190
album issue, isn't
that are reprints. Yeah, and one is a reprint of FF Annual 4 when they were just hurting again, trying to find how this book is going to get put out with a consistent creative team.
I would like to make a quick point. It's interesting that people now complain about late books, etc. How would people now feel about just reprint issues inserted into the normal chronology? People would lose their mind.
Not
but back then,
not
people do all the time.
At 30 cents, I didn't mind when I was a kid. It was a way to read some old
stuff. $4, wouldn't mind.
At $4, no way. No way.
Now, this is Steve's baby, but I've read this twice in my life. I don't remember the first time I read it, a long time ago, and I just reread it this week. And, oh, my, the only thing I want to say is, oh, my, George is on top of his game. It's beautiful. His
that's the
females are beautiful.
Oh, this is when I fell in love with Sue.
Absolutely.
Writer, editor, Len Wein, so he doesn't have anybody editing him, and he's doing his own thing here. And George Perez and Joe Sinnott artwork,
which is
one of my favorite FF art teams.
Yeah, Joe Sinnott hit those lines, those clean lines, those great curves and everything.
Thick and curves. Oh, my goodness.
And you can't be mad at the fact that it opens up with Reed in the blue Speedos of Reason.
This is mid-1977, so I'm about 7 years old here buying these off the racks. And this is when I was really a first consistent FF buyer. And it's really one of my favorite FF tales of my youth. And begins seconds after the climax of that brute, Frightful Four, Counter-Earth, yep. Reed switch line.
Weird.
That Alan and I love so much.
Yes, yes.
Len quickly resolves that stuff and shakes off the extra supporting cast of Tigra, Thundra, and the Impossible Man. like you said, Chris, Sue is so darn pretty when Perez and Sinnott are
yes.
drawing
yes.
these faces. But
and Tigra, too. Tigra looks fine.
Issue 184 is basically that the FF go after Franklin and Agatha on Whisper Hill, where Agatha lives. During that brute storyline, Sue went to go get Franklin, and Agatha basically kidnapped him and took off. So mm-hmm. now Sue comes mm-hmm. back. She almost gets killed by the man she thought was her husband, thrown out of the window
yep.
of the Baxter building. They finally go and say Reed gets saved. And she's like, oh, my kid.
That's right. I got a kid. I forgot.
So she quickly gathers up the troops and they go off to Whisper Hill. They're shot down and they face this cyborg human-like eliminator.
Eliminator.
Yeah.
I see. That reminds me of the Kree Sentry issue from mid Jack Kirby run.
Very much so. Good call. At the end of the issue, he blows himself and Whisper Hill up.
That's where I thought of the Sentry. Yeah.
They don't get any closer to getting Franklin yet. Issue 185 starts, and Reed at this time, also, it should be said, he is still powerless.
Yep.
And he digs out the exoskeleton arms from way back in FF39 when they lost their powers. So he's got extendable arms.
A blind man shall leave them.
the FF are hunting down the trail of Franklin and Agatha, and they discover the town of New Salem in the middle of the Colorado Rockies, hidden away. And sure enough, Agatha and Franklin are there, but the town is full of witches and warlocks who send like an army of gargoyles animated after the FF.
So cool.
Yeah. Now,
so I totally drew those little guys. Well, they weren't little. Well, they were little when I drew them. The Salem Seven, and I cut them out. I colored them with crayon. I cut them out because the miniatures game, they weren't up to snuff in the 70s. So I made my own little paper miniatures.
Look at you.
I my comics, too. I had shoeboxes full of what my parents called my cutouts, and I used to arrange them all on the floor in these giant scenes, and I used to cut out little flame bursts from one panel so I could connect the Human Torch's
awesome.
Hand from another one and make them, you know.
You yeah. are my brother.
We didn't have
arts and crafts.
Amigos.
Arts and crafts.
And now, one thing about this issue, too, on page 14, I think, of 185, we see Sue use her force fields, like, as an offensive, like, amoeba arm to strike out and hit somebody. Is this the first time we ever – did Len come up with that? I don't know if I've ever seen her have the bubble around her and have, like, like I said, like an amoeba extension from the bubble go and, like, swat somebody.
I don't know.
And she does it again in one of the later issues, and I'm thinking, I wonder if this is Len, you know, bringing her powers to the next level.
A little pre-burn empowerment, I like it.
The head of these witches and warlocks is this guy, Nicholas Scratch, and he's got this Satan staff. And if you're holding the Satan staff, you're going to be too much for anybody to handle. He even gets Ben to punch himself in the face
repeatedly about the head and neck.
Why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself?
And where did he get the Satan staff from? Oh, hello, Louisiana. Hello, man thing. Oh, you drop that? Let me pick that up. Love it.
Thank you for the
No, that's where the Molecule that. Man got his.
How dare I? How dare I? That's right. Look at that.
The Satan staff.
Demerit.
Satan.
Demerit. That's what. Demerit. Demerit.
186, one of my favorite issues of the FF. You get this great cover, Enter the Salem Seven. It's a striking cover of this formidable team that the FF are going to have to face. I love it.
George Perez firing generation after generation with those little figures.
The first panel, the splash page, shows the family imprisoned, and they're all waking up like on a dungeon floor with finally reunited with Agatha and Franklin, who are standing above them as they're all waking up from unconsciousness. This really struck me as a child, that like here's the whole family and they're like so helpless here. They're, you know, like Sue's like her posture is her like trying to keep her arms straight to like bring herself up off the floor, and I thought it was like so feminine as a kid. And boy, like I said, this is right when I fell in love with Sue as a 7-year-old.
How could you not? Yeah, I the only other thing I wanted to say about this story arc is, as a father, heck no, I would be furious with Agatha.
Yep.
They just gloss it over like, oh, so you took him to try to protect yourself. No, ain't having that. It was just so glossed over. Like, just let's keep on moving. But like, I don't think Reed ever even gave her a stink eye. Like, nothing. Like, oh, okay, let's move on. I would just be livid.
It looks like Ben is giving it a stink eye, though.
Well, yeah. Ben, yeah, but not the father, which is just so odd. He's so out of sorts. Out of sorts at all times in Len's stories. I don't think he's ever not out of sorts.
Right. It wasn't too long ago when he shut his own kid's brain down with a gun. So
yeah,
it's not like Reed's going to win the Father of the Year award.
True.
And
but Steve, look, he's got the horns. I'm looking.
Yes. They don't stick up. Doing the Ra's al Ghul thing. I don't like when he shouldn't look like he's trying to grow a Wolverine haircut. And that's what Bagley drew him as in a couple of those panels. I don't mind the curls coming down. They just can't shoot up and out. Like he's trying to do his hair all straight back, but it's like not sticking, so it's like sticking out a little bit. That's the look I don't care for. It's hard to be too mad at Agatha because within moments she's being led away by Scratch and his minions to be executed, and you know, and then the FF may be next.
And there goes Franklin disappearing again.
Well, what's cool here is that the Fantastic Four escape their cell thanks to, again, Sue using this offensive force field capability. You get Reed like, hey, honey, that was beautiful how you crushed that guard's head. You know,
beautifully done, Sue.
Mm-hmm. And so the FF are going to run to Agatha's, you know, defense and to find Franklin because he disappears from Sue's arms as insurance for Scratch. But the FF's path is blocked by these 7 unarmed villagers. But they have the weapons of the soul, as they say. And they transform into the Salem 7, who are a supernatural squadron.
Colorful and beautiful and just
So this supernatural squadron, the Salem Seven, is made up of the powerful lion-like Bruticus, who sounds like an adversary of Popeye, possibly.
Optimus Prime.
The aquatic abilities of Hydron.
He's shooting water from I don't know where. Is it his body matter?
The explosive power spines of Thorn with double the N.
Thorn.
The intangible and phonetically spelled vacuum. The animal-like agility of Gazelle. Would I wonder, maybe her first name is Giselle? She could be Giselle Gazelle. The serpentine clutching coils of Reptilla. And the awesome equilibrium affecting Vertigo.
Work that.
So they get into a big scrum with the FF, and I can't believe that Gazelle like can kick Reed's butt until Sue intercedes. But I guess since only his arms are stretchy, I guess he's kind of got a glass jaw.
Yeah, he's flesh and bone there now.
His glass jaw is their Achilles heel. What?
Oh.
The spell hurts.
They're witches and warlocks, and the spell that they used, for some reason, they specifically made their spell to handle the natural abilities of the Fantastic Four. So as soon as Reed's artificial hands are discovered, it ruins the spell. They all turn back into humans, and the FF mop the floor with them.
Guess what time it is.
Exactly.
Yes.
Then it's off to save Agatha, and Sue steals the Satan staff, and I think Len Wein's got a pretty good take on Sue. He's definitely using her for some meatier moments rather than just being a punching bag and thrown out a window like the previous storyline.
Yeah.
At the very end, we learn that Agatha, it was Nicholas Scratch's ma all along.
Oh, the son.
Yeah.
He was a son. Yeah.
Awesome storyline. I know the Salem Seven has come back a few times over the years, but I really, every time they have popped back, it's made me feel a nostalgic nod to this old storyline.
Heck yeah.
Now, when the FF return home, we've got problems. It's issues number 187 and 188, which is a two-parter involving Claw and, more importantly, the Molecule Man. And this is before we get the sappy little Molecule Man that we've got during the Secret Wars. This is a bad Molecule Man. The FF come home. They find the Impossible Man leveled in their living room, smashed into the television that he so adores. And they find Claw and the Molecule Man in their midst, and they're taken down hard. The FF, that is.
This is the FF cannot breathe.
Yeah.
They've been adventure to adventure to adventure to adventure.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the Impossible Man wakes up and saves the day. Really cool sequence. Again, one of these sequences I'll never forget as a kid. The Impossible Man mimics the Claw's powers.
Yes, he does.
He makes his own Claw solid sound maker, and when Claw makes a solid sound construct that looks like a demon who is red like the Claw, the Impossible Man makes a green one, and then they both clash and make this big feedback that knocks everybody back. Great
will sequence. Result in an overwhelming sonic boom.
Indeed. So they're beaten. Our foes here, the Molecule Man and Claw, because of that boom. But unfortunately, Reed walks over and picks up the wand, and the wand of the Molecule Man contains the essence of the Molecule Man, and he takes over Reed's mind, and now he's possessed by the Molecule Man and is the Molecule Man.
Did you notice that it was Sue to try to warn him away? She had the brains there?
I'm telling you, Len Wein had a thing for making Sue be a little bit more empowered and pragmatic and smart.
Yeah, he did.
So when the next issue begins, issue 188, The Rampage of Reed Richards, there is a striking Perez cover with anthropomorphic building. With the tenants all hanging out of the windows and, you know, the steam coming out of the head. Oh, man, this issue.
Yeah.
Sue looks lovely as ever on that cover. The Thing looks just like the Thing I remember as a kid. Perez and Sinnott, great team.
I do want to know, though, what actually does happen to the Molecule Man's mouth and lips? What is that? Why are they jagged like that?
Yeah,
it's gross.
Yeah, they get the lightning bolt effect on the face to it's like Harry Potter gone all crazy. It's like lightning bolts all over. But yeah, I guess then you know who's possessed by the Molecule Man.
Okay.
You know, now we've got this Reed Richards who's possessed, but Reed is inside the wand and he's fighting back. And Reed's consciousness is no slouch. Either, you know. We also get the Watcher showing up, but he's no help at all.
Worthless.
Totally stoic. And for all my love for Perez and Sinnott, I can't say I care too much for this representation of the Watcher.
He doesn't look enough like a big baby.
He looks like a big, angry, muscly dude.
Mm-hmm. But how about that Sue on this page 6, right? Ugh. Have you seen her look prettier than that?
I know it. Really.
That is really pretty.
All throughout. And unfortunately, some of the nuances of the faces are wrecked when the back then, remember, it was really hard to match red onto the panels into the right places. So a lot of times mouths looked funny because you couldn't get the red right on top of the lips. When you were cutting, you know, the acetate or the whatever the whatever that filament was. Yeah, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The mouths often looked a little funny, but boy, you can tell the line work is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Pun intended.
Well done.
So Reed's on the rampage, just like the cover scene. If you ever wanted the payoff to see a cover and be like, wow, this looks so cool, and get exactly that inside, this is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
We get Reed, getting victorious here because the Molecule Man short circuits his own power in sort of a kooky kind of way. The unstable molecules in the FF's costumes, uniforms that we've all come to know and love, the reason why Johnny's costume doesn't burn up when he turns into flame, they created some sort of unexpected feedback for the Molecule Man. He didn't know what he was dealing with there. And I don't know. I can't even explain it. It's so weak. But in closing, we learn why the Watcher showed up in the first place. Powerless Reed resigns from the FF.
Mm-hmm.
Sue with him. FF no more.
No more.
As a kid, then you got the next month waiting for FF no more, and you were stuck with a reprint of annual number 4.
Yep.
Then
what is this?
The next month, you got a new cover. A new Kirby cover, but it was an album issue. Remember those?
Yep.
No. What's an album issue?
It was like a lot of panels, almost like a little celebration of what had come before, and you just got a lot of flashback panels with some new text around it and maybe a little framing sequence if you're lucky. I remember the parody that the Howard the Duck album issue was hilarious around the same time, so it must have been an inside joke in the office as well. The end of Len Wein's run was issues 191 and 192 specifically, and then it starts to be a group effort again as a couple of Len's plots are fleshed out by Keith Pollard, among other folks, and Roger Silfer. But we get the FF packing up the Baxter Building in issue 191. This is in 1978 when it hit the stands. Reed science equipment, everything's got to go. They're all saying their goodbyes to the place. The FF are done. Unfortunately, the cleanup crew is really the Plunderer, Kazar's brother,
yep.
Bad guy. And he's after Reed's vibranium. So the FF all have to come back, and they're back with a vengeance.
And they whoop Heine.
I love the sequence where Johnny frees Reed by spitting fire from a distance on his bonds to fray them.
That, fire loogies.
That was a good one. Now, even though the band got back together to fight the Plunderer, and even though Reed was key in the Plunderer's defeat, you'd think, well, the team's back on then, right? Nope, FF no more.
Yeah, that Reed, man, he is so thick. You know what? I think he's got Asperger's. Because you can't get through to him sometimes. Everybody's trying to tell him, look, just because you can't stretch doesn't mean you're not brilliant.
He's a
strategist and a leader and a scientist. And how many times have we been through this, Reed? And still he wants to break
the
whole situation up.
Man in the world.
In one of the
smartest
previous,
man in the universe, it's tough to get through those guys sometimes.
In one of the previous issues, I liked when Agatha Harkness said to him when he was saying, well, I can't stretch or whatever. And he's like, so what? You can't use your brain?
The brain, yeah. That was good.
Like, good old Agatha. She was good sometimes. She let you have it. She wasn't afraid of anybody. She was already the worst babysitter ever. What are they going to do, fire her? She should have been fired long ago. In the next issue, 192, we get what was going to be the next direction for the Fantastic Four. Len Wein had planned on about a year-long run of focusing on all the different team members kind of solo on little adventurers all split up from each other, and then a big thing would happen and they would all get brought back. Unfortunately, after the next issue, Len Wein left the company as editor and writer. Having to drop this book and Spider-Man that he was writing at the time. And so we only get a taste of that. And here we get in issue 192, it's the Johnny Storm solo issue. And the nice thing about this, especially for Chris Campbell, is that Johnny runs serendipitously into old friend Wyatt Wingfoot while he's out.
I love it. DJ it's like one of Wingfoot. the three appearances of Wyatt Wingfoot for like 20 years.
And Johnny also meets Rebecca Rainbow. I kid you not. he gets into a drag racing match that ends up being interrupted by the Texas Twister. Yeehaw!
who earlier interviewed to replace them when the Frightful Four took over the Baxter Building.
Yeah, he wanted to be part of the Frightful Four, right? Wyatt does better than Johnny, actually. He drives a truck into the Texas Twister's Storm and nearly punches him out before the Twister kind of pushes him away, and then Johnny is on the scene and clears the Twister out, who has a funny little sense of honor there, too, Texas Twister does.
Yeah, it looked like they were trying to redeem the character for possible herodom. Mm.
Then the very end of Len's contributions to the book, again, are just him kind of plotting. And in 193 and 194, just super briefly, we get a little Ben Solo story where he is connecting up with NASA and he does a shuttle test flight.
It's actually really light.
Yeah, it involves Diablo and Darkoth. Remember that demon-like character?
From the... oh my goodness, I'm completely blanking. Buckler issues, right?
Yeah, he was an old friend of Ben's, and he's kind of trapped. It's almost like a death lock kind of a situation. His old pal, Ben's, is put into this horrible Darkoth demon-like creature who Diablo is controlling. So that's not good. Darkoth is purple. With a big tail, and I think years later they wouldn't have gone with purple because they would have associated him with Barney. But we get a seeming death of Ben with a big crash, like the $6 million man crashing the space shuttle and everything. It's actually a good little two-parter, but there's not anything that really lingers from that story.
Darkoth?
Yeah.
Darkoth's sacrifice?
True.
Oh, and I learned how to do explosions from that last page there.
Cool.
I'm serious. You'll see. You'll see. As a matter of fact, you'll see in the third issue of Power Principle. You'll see.
Nice.
I took. Yep.
Power Principle. Power Principle. Where do we find that again, Alan?
at powerprinciplecomic.blogspot.com, or if you're a subscriber of DCBS, you will find it in the catalog.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Right?
That's awesome.
Hey,
that's
did I tell you, Alan?
I
have Comic Base software. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's one of the ones that's been around for a while.
Sure.
And they have a big library of older comics and stuff. And they have one of the old Power Principle issues from Valhalla in their database. Isn't that cool? And it says writer, creator Alan White on it. Your name is on there, and then it kind of doesn't say anything else about it, but it's there, and there's a picture of the cover, and you're cited. So that's pretty cool.
That is so
right
awesome.
On.
Valhalla Comics.
All right, guys. Well, that was a nice I'm glad you got to talk about this, too, and it was very important to you, and I enjoyed them as well. It was a nice little run.
It was, and now we're starting a whole new world, and we can never go back, but it's fun to go back and at least visit, and we'll see where it goes from here. We'll try to get together after the holidays and stuff when there's been a couple more issues out, and we'll see where things are going.
We'll Absolutely. See if Chris is sane after a few more issues.
I'll be fine.
And the other thing, folks, is I recently went on to iTunes and looked, and we haven't had an iTunes review for Marvel Noise since before I started contributing 4 years ago.
What?
So if you got a chance, drop iTunes a little review and mention the show, because it's been a real long, like 2008 is the last review we've had, and we never ask, but since it came up and I happened to see it, I thought I would. So if you get a chance, leave us an iTunes review. Let us know how we're doing.
I mean, come on.
All right, so that's it for us. Next time, I should be back for the end of the year extravaganza. Tom Morris should be coming up with a year in review roundtable that I'm going to be a part of. So I think we're going to be taking a look back at the year that was 2012 for the House of Ideas. All right, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
As Stan says, closing the soapbox page of FF154. Till next time, hang loose, face front, think Marvel, and hey, why not take a troll to dinner? Later.
Members of the quartet, Gene Wright, Joe Morello, Paul Desmond, myself. You've been a great audience for us. Coming out was a big surprise because of the newspaper strike. We expected to be here alone. So thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a thrill for us.